listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Brought to you by WelcomeToPerfectville.com. Prepare to go deep.
What is up, Dolph fans, and welcome back to another installment of The Finalysis podcast. I am your host, as always, Travis Wingfield, and joined by my co-host on the other side of the country here, Kevin Dern. Kevin, what's going on tonight, bud?
Not too much. Just gearing up for free agency, checking out some news on the Shrine Bowl practices or Shrine Game practices, whatever you call it these days. And, you know,
I guess it's season,
but still looking at more Dolphin stuff, obviously.
I guess it's kind of like the All-Star Game light. It's the later round picks type of guys that get invited to that game and smaller school guys. And it's kind of fun to get a chance to watch them all gather in one spot, because if you don't have game tape available to you, which most people don't, I certainly don't during the season, from some of those lower level college teams, then you really don't get much of a chance to watch them other than replays or YouTube cutups or that kind of stuff. So it's cool to see them all out there in one setting, and you get to see them battle against each other. And these guys are fighting for, money really when it comes down to it, with the way the, getting drafted higher means a higher contract. So it's pretty cool to see, but that's going to be for another episode. The draft, we'll have that covered for you. We'll have the Senior Bowl covered for you. But tonight's episode is going to be a free agency preview. Now, this is something Kevin and I have been cooking up for a while now, and we don't really have much of a format to follow tonight. I mean, we do have, outline we're going to follow, but we don't really have particularly certain guys we're going to hit on. We're just going to kind of give you guys an update on who might be available or who might be looking at the Dolphins or, that type of thing. So this is going to be an ongoing, evolving type of situation where we're going to be updating you guys throughout the offseason, because I don't know about you, Kevin, but I think I'm more geared up for the offseason shows than I was the in-season shows.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, I think I saw today that the new league year starts on like March 9th or March 10th, something like that. And that's a long month and a half. So hopefully you guys will tune in and listen to this preview, and we'll probably have some updated things as we get closer to free agency and all that stuff. So I'm excited.
We definitely will.
Last episode, most excited I've been for an off season in a long time.
No, it's pretty crazy, man. We definitely will have you guys covered pretty much from, start to finish. I mean, Sam and Chris started Welcome to Perfectville podcast last January, and their popularity grew out of control. And I'm kind of hoping the same thing happens with us here and, also in association with those guys. So we'll have the Finzies Awards coming up for you guys, where it'll be a super episode with me, Kevin, Chris, and Sam all together giving out the awards. That's for the future. This episode today is going to be about free agency and some of our own guys in-house, who we should bring back, who we should not bring back, and who we should pursue on other teams. And Kevin, one of the things I like to look at in free agency, because I feel like, you always go into this time of year with a plan. Or I remember back when I was, I think it was like 2008 or 2009, Chad Johnson was going on Twitter and other various avenues talking about how, I remember there was a video about him saying like, "Hey, Bill Parcells, quit fooling around and sign me already." And I was like, "Okay, cool. Chad Johnson's going to be a Dolphin." And then I would go through and say, "These are the moves they're going to make." And I have my own, 53-man roster drawn up. And then you get to March and none of it actually happens. So I think one of the keys you look at is where has a guy been, which coaches has he played for, which coach relationships has he been a part of, which it kind of takes a lot of legwork to get those connections together for you. But we're going to try our best we can for that. Talk about some of the positions we need. I think those are pretty obvious. Kevin, have you looked much into the free agency pool and what is available for us and what are the positions we might be looking at?
Yeah, and I think that was one of the nice things about this season is, at the end of the season, I think the needs are pretty apparent, even to like the most common of fan. The defense is going to need work. Offensively, I think if you bring back some key guys, we're pretty much right there. Maybe you look to revamp the offensive line, but I think it's going to be a defensive heavy offseason this year.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that, because there's, 30th ranked defense this year, and the offense really started kind of click there towards the end of the year. And you mentioned the needs are pretty obvious, but I don't know that they necessarily are, because I still see a lot of Dolphins fans saying that Ryan Tannehill needs to go. So we'll put that aside. I think if you're into this show, you probably aren't much of a Ryan Tannehill hater, but that's possible. So if you are, we'll try to change your mind over the course of the next 6 months or so. But he's not going anywhere, so get used to it. Quarterback is all good and fine for the Dolphins. Maybe a mid-round draft pick there. But yeah, definitely not a big free agent signing or anything like that. So Kevin mentioned that the new league year starts here coming up pretty shortly in March. But we do have 3 football games left, Kevin. 264 games down. 3 to go. I swear that, July and August take so long to get over, And then September through December just really wraps up, and it's what it feels like almost a month.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, I guess my thought on it is, one, I'm disappointed Miami didn't make more of a run. Two, I'm disappointed because my playoff prediction basically went to shit the first weekend because I had the Giants as my Super Bowl champs. They're obviously not in it. So, you know, for all I care, this weekend and the Super Bowl can fly right by. And I want to get into the off-season stuff. But, you know, I guess if I had anything to say with it, all I want is New England to not win. I don't care who else wins as long as the Patriots don't.
That's pretty much been the Dolphins fan mantra for the past 15 years or so. It's, you know, root for the Dolphins until December, and then January rolls around and you become an anti-Patriots fan. So nothing has changed from that regard. The Steelers are there again, which I'm pretty much sick of them too. I don't really need to see them get their, what is it, sixth Super Bowl ring now. And then the Packers seven now. Okay, yeah, I can't even keep track. the Packers, I used to like Aaron Rodgers. I was a huge fan of him coming out of Cal. I thought when he took over for Brett Favre, he was going to be awesome. And, you know, to pat my own back, he was. But the State Farm commercials, just his general attitude, the whole relax thing last year, and then now the run the table thing that I've heard every single week since they started winning games again. I'm just so sick of all those teams. So for me, Kevin, it's Matt Ryan and Dan Quinn, and the Falcons are bust for this year because I really can't stand any of those other three remaining teams left.
Yeah, I'd be, you know, obviously I don't want to see the Steelers win a seventh one just because that would give them, you know, two up on the most all time over San Francisco and Dallas, but I would be fine with either Atlanta or Green Bay winning it. You know, one of my best friends from school, Jamie, he's a huge Packers fan. And, you know, I think it'd be cool to see Atlanta win one finally.
Yeah, definitely. I always like seeing the new teams come about and getting their first ring. So that's always fun to see. I have a friend on Twitter that I've met a few times from work. He lives across the country, but he's a Atlanta Falcons fan too. So that'd be cool. So I know what you mean about friends and having their, you know, the teams of your friends win championships is pretty cool too. So like, I get you there. And the Packers would be a lot better than the Patriots or the Steelers. So we're in agreement on that as well. But those are the other teams. Those have the other players that could be leaving those teams shortly in March with the league year ending, as Kevin had mentioned. But first off, let's get into some Miami Dolphins talk and enough of this Shrine game and the rest of the NFL talk. And let's go over some of these Dolphins free agents, Kevin, and who's going to be back. Who are the priority guys? Who's not going to be back? I think you had told me off the air that Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald had mentioned there are a few guys the Dolphins have already basically proclaimed they're going to cut.
Yeah, so for those of you who know Barry Jackson, he's pretty plugged into the team. Doesn't really write columns or anything, but he knows a lot of information and usually posts it, and it's usually pretty accurate. You can probably guess some of the names, but he did a Sports Buzz, I think it was a week or two ago, and he basically said that Miami was going to cut Mario Williams, Earl Mitchell, Koa Meese, and Deion Jordan, you know, all four guys on defense to basically save money. And I think someone I saw on the Fins kind of added up the math, and I think it was somewhere between like $15 and $17 million is what those four guys being cut would free up. And then as far as some key free agents, you know, on offense, you've got Kenny Stills led the team in touchdowns. Deion Sims finished the year as our number one tight end. Damien Williams is a restricted free agent, the running back. Jermon Bushrod, the guard. Defense, I think really the key one there is you have Andre Branch is an unrestricted guy, and then Kiko Alonso is a restricted free agent. And I guess Michael Thomas, if you know, he's a great special teamer, he's unrestricted this year as well. But those are the top guys I would kind of look at. So,
yeah,
Travis, what do you think in terms of, like, you know, who would you bring back out of that group, I guess?
Well, yeah, you mentioned all those guys on top of that list, and there are some depth guys on the list also. I'm looking at it right now, and there's some names that you and I have both trashed publicly quite a bit on here on the show before. But you know, I don't think it's any surprise to anyone that has followed my writing or listened to the show at all that my biggest priority would be Kenny Stills and getting him back in the fold. You know, Adam Gase talked about how he tried to trade for Kenny Stills when he was with the Bears from the Saints before the Dolphins did, and he wanted him to be part of that team, and then the Dolphins, you know, scooped him up, and so now he's coaching Kenny Stills, and we saw in the preseason back in August, he was, you know, the focal point of the offense at that point, and then he kind of started off slow. The big drop in Seattle really killed him, but He really picks it up towards the end of the year. I think he's a very key point to this offense, which leads to the next guy that I want to talk about. You know, Deion Sims at tight end. And I'm glad you mentioned that comment from thefins.com about someone that had mentioned that, you know, you can save so much money by cutting these guys, and basically you can roll that money into a high-priced free agent, and we'll get to that here in a minute. But I think it was CK, Chris Coffin, that you mentioned there had that post. He also talked about the importance of a tight end on this offense and how you already have, you know, a running back that's getting, I think ideally Adam Gase wants to get Jay Ajayi 20, 25 carries a game, which is absurd in this day and age. And then you have three receivers that all command the ball, and they can do it in a volume manner as well. I mean, I watched some games today because I was trying to scout a certain defensive player that we'll get to here in a minute, but it was a San Diego game, and Devontae Parker was just killing those guys over the middle of the field, and he kind of exploded late in the game. And I watched another game the other day, and it was Landry was the guy. And so you have Stills, Landry, and Parker, and Ajayi that are the four main guys in the offense. So do we need a number one tight end that's going to be like a first-round pick or a high-priced guy or someone that's going to command a lot of targets and be a seam buster? Because I think this offense really took off when Jordan Cameron left the lineup, who's another free agent, by the way. When Cameron leaves the lineup and then become more of a running staple team with, you know, two tight end sets a lot of the time and guys that stay in line and block that aren't necessarily needing a lot of targets to be productive. So I think that Deion Sims, for me, Kev, can fit back as a number one tight end. I do love this tight end class. I would like to see them maybe get some value on a guy later in the draft. But free agency-wise, I don't see anybody else besides Sims coming back. So those are my two guys I want to focus on. The other one, Kevin, something we kind of had talked about earlier, not in the show but off the air, was just something with options. I mean, this team has so many options they can go in. And because of what you mentioned with the lack of like serious holes that we have this year compared to years past where we had to patch up a secondary and find a pass rusher and get a left tackle, and is the quarterback going to be okay? What's the running back looking like? So, I mean, we don't have that this year. We have, like, you know, four or five key ideas that we have to fill. And so, you know, the guy that I'm talking about signing on defense it's going to be a big price tag. You know, a pass rusher is, I'll just tell you right now, I'll quit teasing you, it's Melvin Ingram from San Diego. We'll get to him in a minute, but I think he's probably going to command a big contract. And you had mentioned getting rid of some of the riffraff off the roster, like the Cole Meeses and the Earl Mitchells that do have contracts, but they don't necessarily need to be on this team. You know, if you cut Mario Williams and his big salary, and you don't sign Andre Branch, because I think he's probably going to get a decent paycheck too out there somewhere, probably from some lower-level team that just wants to make a big splash, I think if you let those two guys go, you can make a big move to a Melvin Ingram or maybe a Chandler Jones if you were to hit the market.
Yeah, I guess kind of just going back through it all, I think it's important too. I think someone, might have been Barry Jackson, mentioned that Miami has like 13 or 15 million that they can roll over from this past year's salary cap. So that kind of gives them, you know, a boost. You know, as far as re-signing guys, I think, you know, Kenny Stills is a must. You know, he's kind of leaked it, you know, through various media, you know, Barry Jackson included, that he wants to stay. I think Alan Pupar from the Dolphins website wrote, you know, a piece about how Adam Gase wants him to stay. So I think that kind of seems like a mutual fit. I agree with you on Deion Sims. I think he, you know, especially the last five or six games from that San Francisco game on to the end of the season, he played pretty well. He too has kind of tweeted out that he wants to stay. So, you know, I'd be fine with bringing both of those guys back. I think to expand on it a little, I would probably do the restricted free agent tender on Damian Williams. Just because one of the things I've noticed is, you know, a lot more teams are throwing to their running backs, especially if you don't have, you know, a Gronkowski or a Jimmy Graham type of tight end. And, you know, most people don't realize it. Like we mentioned on the last podcast, Damian Williams had the third most touchdowns of any offensive player. So, and he's a pretty decent special teamer. So I think you tender him. On defense, really, Kiko Alonso. You know, Matt Burke has basically said, you know, the new defensive coordinator has basically said he's going to be, you know, part of this team, whether he's the middle linebacker or the outside or weak side backer, who knows. But, you know, I would expect them to tender Kiko. And then I guess if you can, I would hope they would go after Michael Thomas just for some depth. And he is our best special teamer. So those would be my guys. You know, so I think really the only question mark I have is what you do with Brandon Albert on the offensive line.
Right.
You know, I think you could probably try and offer him to stay at a reduced salary is option one. I think option two would be you offer him to stay at a reduced salary and kick him into guard so you can put Tunsil at left tackle. Or option three, you cut him and have even more money to use, which may be helpful because eventually, you know, once the league year hits, you can start talking to Jarvis Landry about an extension. Rashad Jones wanted an extension. I would hope Miami would plan for that. But, you know, Travis, what do you think about, you know, the Brandon Albert situation?
I'm really glad. I'm sorry, Kevin.
I was going to say, like, if you bring back Stills, Sims, and Williams, you basically got your skill position set up, you know, quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end. Really the only thing becomes that offensive line, and I would say specifically the interior of the offensive line, depending on what you do with Brandon Albert.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up because, Kevin, one of the things that I was curious about was that whole situation and thinking about something that I heard Mike Tannenbaum say on a link that you share with me on Albert Breer's Monday Morning Quarterback podcast that I actually didn't even know was a thing until I listened to it from that link you sent me. What he said, though, was something that I actually said I had written on the message board on thefins.com about just kind of how you look at all these teams that are in the playoffs or making deep runs in the playoffs, how continuity is the staple of those teams, and how, you know, Bill Belichick's been there for however 16, 17 years, whatever it is now. You got Mike McCarthy been with the Packers for 10 years, and then you got you know, Jason Garrett has been with the Cowboys forever, and
with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Tomlin's with Pittsburgh. They never fire their coaches ever, so there's that, you know. But the continuity is a thing that I think really – I think it gets overlooked a lot in the league because, you know, as guys that consider themselves evaluators like you and I are, we're so quick to dismiss guys that maybe don't start off their career very good, and we just think, okay, well, you got to replace that guy. But I think there's something to be said about a coaching staff that can coach up a guy and develop him and get good play out of him. And someone that I think is a good – example of that is Paul Solei back in the Tony Sperano era. He was nothing for the first couple of years, and all of a sudden he explodes and gets a big contract from the Falcons. So, you know, I think there's something to be said about that. But to get to your point, Kevin, the continuity on the offensive line is something that I'm very, you know, I want to see it maintained. But at the same time, the more I go back and watch last season, Brandon Albert was kind of a weak spot on the offensive line for us. And I think Laremy Tunsil, did he give up a sack this year at left guard?
One. I saw the PFF grade. He gave up one sack the whole year.
That's unbelievable. I mean, this is a rookie that changes positions and comes in and becomes one of the best pass-protecting left guards in football. So you put him at left tackle. He handled Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson in that Cincinnati game that we had talked about, you know, way back when on one of the first episodes. I think he's got probably some of the best feet in the game in terms of offensive linemen. So I really want to see him kick out to left tackle. So I think my favorite option is the one that you mentioned about giving him on a reduced salary and kicking him inside the guard, because that was something that I think that you and I had even discussed on the forum before, you know, the Finalysis podcast was a thing, about how they should see if he can play inside because he might be better in a phone booth and he might be more protected from injuries inside there. So that's my favorite option.
He actually did have some experience at
Virginia, right?
And I think he played it his first year with Kansas City,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
I remember when they drafted him, when the Chiefs drafted him in the first round, he was listed as a guard on Mel Kiper's big board. So I knew he had guard experience there. So, but he's been a left tackle in the league for a long time. He got the big left tackle contract from us, obviously. But that brings me into another guy, Kevin, the last guy I want to talk about on our own spot here. We can go into some more options along the offensive line as well as the rest of the team. But it's Jermon Bushrod. And you and I had talked about this last episode about I couldn't figure out who the other guys were that said they wanted to come back. We knew that Kenny Still said that. You've mentioned Andre Branch and Deion Sims. But Jermon Bushrod wants to keep playing football, whereas last year at this time he was contemplating retirement. And now he's got this, you know, reinvigorated fountain of youth type of a situation where he wants to come back and play more for this team. I think probably says something about Adam Gase and the staff and this program we've built. But, you know, he's 32 years old. He had a shoulder injury all year. He made $1.5 million this year. So a cheap contract, was supposed to compete for a job, ended up winning the right guard job, and then started every game at right guard. So I think that I would be very interested in bringing Jermon Bushrod back under the caveat that he has to compete for a starting job. And I'm hoping against all things that he is the sixth man off the bench, because I think he has that durability, that stability, that's continuity. Not to get too many words that end in a Y with you here, but I think that he could be a key cog for the offensive line depth, which we have seen become quite an issue, because over the years, you know, what have we learned most about Ryan Tannehill? He functions best when there's a strong running game and a good offensive line in front of him, just as any quarterback would. So I think there's something to be said about, you know, maybe bringing both those guys back in different roles.
Yeah, I guess I agree completely with Albert. I think that the second option I listed, you know, bringing him back to play guard at a reduced salary is probably my favorite. If he, you know, shows any resistance to that, then I would say, you know, best of luck, go test the market,
yeah.
You know, our offer stands. With Bushrod, you know, I would have to hope Miami realizes that he probably shouldn't be a starter, but then, you know, I looked at his, you know, what Adam Gase said about him, you know, in Chicago, he was sort of a swing tackle, that sixth man. I would say if he wants to come back and compete and be, you know, maybe that second backup guard, you know, after Craig Urbick, who I didn't even realize he was still under contract, or even compete with Sam Young for that swing tackle job,
yep.
I'd be okay with it, but I would not bank on him in any way, shape, or form as being a starter. So, you know, with that in mind, I think we'll jump into our first position group that I had kind of picked out was the guards themselves. And really there was three of them that kind of stood out to me. Kevin Zeitler, I think, is kind of the prize guy. He's from the Bengals. Young guy, big, strong. Larry Warford of Detroit and TJ Lang of Green Bay were kind of the three that I picked out at guard that I would probably hope Miami kind of makes a serious run at to sign. Almost in the same vein that the Raiders went after Kelechi Asemele last year,
right?
And kind of just, you know, solidified that O line. So, you know, Travis, do you have a favorite of those three, or even another guy that maybe I didn't list?
I think you really sold me on Larry Warford. I know that we mention him all the time, but CK Parrothead on Twitter, Chris Kaufman, he really was big on Larry Warford as well. And I think that's probably your jumping off point. He's kind of got that big body. He's a bit of a mauler in the run game. Can probably do a lot more than Jermon Bushrod did in the run game for the Dolphins next year if he were to become a Dolphin. The other name that I don't think you didn't mention that I've seen floated out there quite a bit is a Dallas Cowboy that won't be back because of Lyle Collins, basically, and the depth that line has. But Ronald Leary, now, do you find him as a scheme fit for this team? Is he more of a gap blocker, or can he be an inside zone type of guy like the Dolphins like to look for?
I think he would be a fit. The one question I have with him is his pass protection. Just watching the Cowboys a couple times this year, I didn't think he was that great at it. I thought he was a good run blocker. You know, I would kind of agree. I think Larry Warford is probably my favorite. I actually got to see him play in college once. My brother went to Kentucky and went down there to visit him for a game. It was actually the game against Florida where Tim Tebow got knocked out. but got to see Warford play that year, and I think he played that maybe the next year. We went down and saw him play against Georgia. But he was impressive that year. So I would probably side with Warford. You know, I've heard a lot of things locally that the Bengals don't want to let Kevin Zeitler go. I think that's probably smart on their end. TJ Lang, I would kind of consider maybe if he took a lower contract, but that's kind of what I feel about the guards. Leary, you know, I would just tend to pass just because, you know, there's that sort of that Dallas Cowboys O-line mystique, but I think individually he's not, you know, anything that you can't get out of Warford.
Yeah, you can look at that line. You can see these play next to Travis Frederick and Tyron Smith out there, so you definitely can see why he could have success there. But I look at this guard list. I don't see a lot of names besides Warford and Lang that jump out to me. I'm looking at Warford's salary this year. He's on a rookie contract still, so he's got that, you know, $7.75 million contract this year. So he's going to want a big paycheck because he certainly earned it. So I think that if you're going to make a splash on offense, it's got to be Larry Warford.
Yeah, and then the other thing I looked at too is my old roommate was actually a huge Detroit Lions fan, and you know, they drafted Graham Glasgow last year. They drafted Lincoln Tomlinson out of Duke the year before.
Yeah.
I believe they also drafted another guard that same year as Tomlinson. So they've got bodies, you know, in the pipeline. And, you know, I think they've got a number of free agents coming up. You know, some we'll touch on. They have Ziggy Ansah on the horizon after next season. Plus Stafford's got a huge contract. So I think they may kind of let Warford sneak out. So the next position I had written down, and Travis, this will, you know, help us touch on your guy, was defensive end. You know, obviously Jason Jones is already gone. It sounds like they're planning on cutting Mario Williams. I kind of feel like Andre Branch is probably going to outprice himself from what Miami would offer,
right?
Especially for the limited production. So, you know, Travis, Travis, you kind of touched on Melvin Ingram a second ago. I'll let you take the mic and enlighten everyone on Melvin Ingram.
Oh my God, man. So I had work off today because we're stuck in an ice storm out here. And so I threw on the Dolphins and Chargers game. What I found fun about scouting some of the other teams' players is that I try to find the game against the Dolphins because then I can do a little bit of double scouting there. So I threw on that Chargers game. And first thing, I just want to say how awesome Ryan Tannehill was in that game. He was so phenomenal. Yeah. But there was one guy that kept giving him fits. And it was number 54 off the edge, Melvin Ingram, who I think I heard that he grew up a Dolphins fan and has I've read it on Twitter, I believe is the only source I really have, but he has a desire to be in Miami. Now, whether or not LA, which is weird to say, the LA Chargers will franchise him is another thing, which could be like a $16, $17 million figure for the defensive end position for franchise tagging. So, or I guess he's an outside linebacker for them, but you know, that's a pretty big price. But in that game, in the first quarter alone, he had a strip sack. So a sack and a forced fumble. He had a tackle for a loss. He was setting the edge and closing it off and forcing Ajayi to pick his second lane. And then a couple of hurries throughout the rest of the game. He ended up with some hurries and put Tannehill on his back two more times. So he was a menace in that game all over the field. On that big Tannehill run where he escaped the pocket right and ran for about 18 yards, Ingram was the one that did a wicked spin move on Brandon Albert. You know, he sold the upfield rush all game, kind of like Dwight Freeney does, and then hit him with a few spin moves back to the inside, and he got to Tannehill, but, you know, Tannehill being the Iron Man that he is, you know, escaped the tackle and got out of the pocket for a big run, but he was a menace in that game. I want to watch a lot more of him now because I'm really intrigued by him. I loved him out of South Carolina. He had a couple of years with the Chargers where he didn't see the field very much, and he had an ACL injury too, I believe, but he's back from that. He looks awesome. I think if you're going to make a big splash in this free agent class, you know, you can find somewhat of a bargain at guard or whatever. And this is a good class in the draft at D end as well. But I think you can put Melvin Ingram in this defense in the wide nine. And he has a really good burst off the line of scrimmage, much like Cam Wake. And he times the snap count really well. And he can kind of get that dip under where he keeps his balance with, you know, leaning under the offensive lineman. I think if you have him and Cam, I know Cam's probably only one, maybe two more years left at this point. Well, who knows with Cam Wake, but I think if you spread that line out in that wide nine and you really compromise the edges of the offensive line for the opposition and you force them to put a tight end or a back, you really open up the middle for Ndamukong Suh or maybe even, you know, welcome in some more A-gap blitzes, which I've been looking for, you know, for a while now. So I think that he would be a really good fit in this defense. He might have to put a little bit more weight back on because he dropped down to about 250 this offseason, but that's kind of where his production went up, so I don't really want to make him change that. But I think he might need to get a little bit bigger. Maybe you can answer that for me. Does he need to gain a little more weight to play D-end in this scheme?
Yeah, so I'm gonna actually take a step back, and then I'll get into the Ingram aspect of it. So, you know, when I first looked at the defensive end free agency list, the name that jumped off was Chandler Jones. He would kind of be my dream scenario because he is, you know, tailor-made for the wide nod stuff. But Bruce Arians already said, you know, worst comes to worst, Arizona's going to franchise him, and they've got the money to do so. The next name on the list, you know, I kind of looked at was Melvin Ingram. And, you know, with Matt Burke coming on board, he's kind of more of a true Jim Schwartz disciple. And, you know, if you have read my articles on the Wide Nine or the new article, which, you know, has not been posted yet, but we will get that up there soon, about what Matt Burke is going to bring to the table. I guess I can say I correctly guessed that one. But, you know, I kind of wonder if Miami's going to steer back towards those bigger, you know, heavy defensive ends. You know, the Titans always had Javon Kearse, Kyle Vandenbosch, and Detroit. You know, they've even brought Vandenbosch over there. They had Jason Jones, Ziggy Ansah, George Johnson, some of those big guys. You know, then I looked at it, and one of the defenses that Jim Schwartz was a part of was the Buffalo Bills in 2014. And they actually played Jerry Hughes as a defensive end. And Hughes was, you know, 6'2", about 250. So that's pretty much the same size as Melvin Ingram. And one of the things they did with Hughes was they kind of let him play standing up in a two-point stance. If you guys remember when Lou Anarumo took over from Miami for Kevin Coyle in 2015, they kind of let Olivier Vernon do that. And that was sort of the whole impetus of wanting them to, you know, bring in the wide nine. They talked about interviewing Jim Schwartz. He ultimately turned him down. So I think Melvin Ingram can certainly play in this defense. I don't think he needs to bulk up a whole heck of a lot just because he's so fast off the ball and he has that natural leverage. My only worry with him would be the price tag because, yeah, I feel like he could get OV money, and history there with injuries and sort of the lack of production kind of scares me a little bit. If for my money, if I'm going to give it out to somebody, I'm actually going to go to two guys. It would be a toss up for me. Would be Devin Taylor of Detroit, who's played in the system, who played under Burke, or Jason Pierre-Paul, who kind of bounced back from that gruesome hand injury. I think he had 7 sacks this year. He would be tailor-made for the wide nine as well. He's 6'5", 278 pounds. Taylor is 6'7", 276. So those are some of the bigger type guys that I would look at. Travis, did you have any other names at the end?
You went over a good amount of them there. But one guy I was looking at that, I watched that show All or Nothing on Amazon with the Cardinals. And another guy that's a free agent too from the defensive line for them is Calais Campbell. I know he's 30 years old and he's probably gonna get a pretty big paycheck, but maybe a little bit less because of that age. But I don't know where he would fit in the scheme. He looks more like a five technique than anything, so I don't know that he really has a spot on the edge there in this defense. But he's a guy that would bring in instant leadership and instant veteran presence on that defensive line to go along with Sue and Wake. So he's one that I'd be curious about. I'd kick the tires. I would see what it's going to cost and where he might be able to fit. But other than that, man, I think you nailed it up pretty good.
Yeah, I had three more guys on my list. Actually, another Cardinal, Alex Okafor, who's one of their outside linebackers. But I think he showed a lot of potential coming off the bench behind Jones and Golden. I'd like to see what he could do. The other two names I had.
Sounds like, oh, there you are. Kevin, we lost there for about 2 seconds. Can you back up? The other name you had was, and then you went out.
So Alex Okafor from the Cardinals.
Yep.
And then Mario Addison from Carolina. Okay. Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
Addison, I think, can kind of be, your third or fourth DN, kind of eat some snaps in the rotation. And then another interesting guy, I don't know if Miami would be interested in him or not, is Dayton Jones for the Packers. He plays outside linebacker. He plays a five technique spot, and he rushes from inside with Mike Daniels in some of their formations. Not very productive, but I wonder if him moving over and kind of playing the Jason Jones role would kind of, allow him to step forward. So those are my guys at defensive end. Travis, did you have a position you wanted to kind of go over next?
Yeah, I do. But first, before we go on to that, man, I'm looking at Mario Addison right now and looking at his production per snap count. Man, he was a beast last year. 10 sacks, 15 quarterback hits, so 25 total, contacts to the quarterback in limited time because he missed a couple of games. What a stud he was last year. That's a good find on that one. But let's go over to the linebackers now, Kevin. And I've looked at linebackers a lot for the Dolphins this offseason because we need to rehaul the entire unit, I think. You talked about Kiko Alonso kicking outside to possibly weak side linebacker. I think he fits there better. He's just kind of undersized, and he does a lot more guesswork than he does, pre-snap recognition when it comes to shooting the gap. So I'd rather see him play the weak side and be more of maybe a coverage guy and, do things, back down the field. But what I've looked at from that position is a lot of the draft. So I haven't had much of a chance to go over these guys on this list here I'm looking at now. But if you want to kick us off with linebackers, I'd be more than happy to listen.
Yeah, so I agree. I think Alonzo probably is best suited as a weak side guy. And unfortunately, just kind of looking through that list, if Miami's in the free agent market for a middle linebacker, it's pretty slim pickings.
Right.
I think they're better off kind of looking for the draft. But the one name that popped out to me is actually a guy who's had experience in the wide nine. Miami actually worked him out last fall. It's Brandon Spikes. He was a backup for Buffalo this year. He's going to be a free agent. I don't know that you sign him with the intention of making him a starter, but maybe he's someone you bring to camp and maybe he can impart some of that wisdom of the defense there. He played in the wide nine under Jim Schwartz for Buffalo in 2014, played pretty well. But I think he's probably a backup at best or, a goal line specialist, something like that. The other three names I looked at were, one advantage you have of the wide nine is your outside linebackers are kind of interchangeable. You don't necessarily need that big Koa Misi, 6'3", 250, 255-pound guy. You can use some smaller guys that are, athletic and fast and can tackle. So three names that kind of jumped out with me were Josh Vines of Detroit. He was their strong side linebacker this year. obviously he's got experience in the defense. Mike Morgan of Seattle, kind of as a coverage specialist, athlete type of guy. And then the last name is actually a former Super Bowl MVP, Malcolm Smith of the Raiders. I don't know that he necessarily fits that type of defense that Oakland is wanting to run, that, you know, sort of 4-3, 3-4 hybrid type of style that Jack Del Rio ran in Denver and took out there. But I think Malcolm Smith is kind of a, you know, a fast, athletic linebacker who can cover. I don't know that you necessarily want him covering, you know, Rob Gronkowski man-to-man, but I think he's athletic enough to, you know, drop into some zones and be in the right spot more so than, you know, Jelani Jenkins and Hewitt and Paysinger and Hull and all of those guys. So those are my four names at linebacker.
Those are some really good names. I'm glad you pointed those out because I think that it's – when you look at the free agent list, it's really easy to get excited about the top names in the list and, you know, think about the big splash and all that stuff we've talked about already. But I'm glad you pointed out some more of those kind of under-the-radar signings that are going to happen. You know, we're going to bring in guys every year that you're like, oh, okay, let's study up on that guy because we don't know much about him. But another guy that I'm looking at here that I think could draw a little bit of interest simply for the fact that Mike Tannenbaum tends to show a little bit of a trend in terms of taking guys like this, but Manti Te'o from the San Diego Chargers, you know, he's 25, he's had an injury history so far, he's got fake girlfriends and all that stuff, but, you know, he can be a pretty good run thumper for you. I think that Tannenbaum tends to buy low on guys and hope that they, you know, they strike it big. I mean, Kiko Alonso was that quintessential signing in that department this year with missing tons of games due to injury and not really productive the last couple of years. And then Byron Maxwell also not so productive, but you know, bringing those guys over. So I think Manti Te'o could be a guy to look at in that position. But I like those two Seahawks you mentioned, or former Seahawks, I guess, when it comes to Malcolm Smith and then also Michael Morgan. Those are some good names there. So I'm with you on that. And what was the fourth position you wanted to look at, Kev?
Yeah, so I'll get to the last position in a second, but to your point, you know, you talked about, you know, being familiar with it. One quick note, when Mike Tannenbaum was actually a coaching agent, everyone kind of knows, you know, he was working with Steve Kerr and David Blatt and Dan Quinn. He was working with Relativity Sports. That is the same agency that Jason Pierre-Paul is with, so there's some inroads there that I think Miami might, you know, do well to explore.
And to that point, Kevin, you've mentioned this a few times, the pipeline that they kind of seem to have from Detroit, it looks like. I mean, I know we haven't really gone to that well too many times, but you've mentioned, like, you know, I don't want to give away your next position because I feel like I know what it is, but there's a former Detroit line on that list possibly. And then, you know, you mentioned Devin Taylor. We have Ndamukong Suh, obviously. So that familiarity within that defense and trying to build kind of a similar one to the one they had in 2014, I like that idea. So I like where your head's at there.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you know, I think you know exactly who my position at defensive tackle is going to be. You guessed both of that right off the bat. you know, the last 2 years, we've taken in Ndamukong Suh, Jason Jones, and Issa Abdul-Kaddous. So that's three Lions. You know, they run the same type of defense. Matt Burke, coach there, under Jim Schwartz, who's the co-creator of the wide nine. We have the other co-creator, Jim Washburn, on staff. So it just seems like a natural fit. And at D-tackle, Nick Fairley is the guy. I, for the life of me, cannot figure out why the last 2 years Miami hasn't gone after him. But if you go back and watch those first eight games until Fairley got hurt of that 2014 Lions defense, he and Sue were just dominant inside. I think for me, you know, Fairley's a free agent from New Orleans. He's played okay there. And you know, at the time it was St. Louis, but with the Rams. I think you bring him in with the idea of maybe making him, you know, that third tackle that's better than Earl Mitchell, mm-hmm. and someone who has familiarity with the scheme and has played with Sue. I'll actually give you my other three names I had written down there. Two of them are Detroit Lions from this past season. Tyron Walker is sort of an interior guy. He's probably more of a three technique kind of backup, you know, Ndamukong Suh type thing, a little better than Nick Williams. And then Stephen Charles, he actually played with Detroit this year, but had played in Buffalo under Jim Schwartz in 2014. And he's kind of a versatile guy. They would use him as sort of an oversized end against the run, and would take Jerry Hughes off the field in certain formations. And then he can also play inside. And he's actually a decent pass rusher for his size. I think he's like 6'3", 6'4", about 295, 300 pounds. and would play both of those interior spots, sort of like Jason Jones. And then the last guy is kind of an interesting guy to me. His name is Brandon Thompson. You guys might remember him. He, you know, that ridiculous Dolphins-Bengals Halloween Thursday nighter with the Cameron Wake walk-off safety. Everyone remembers when Geno Atkins tore his ACL in the game. Brandon Thompson was the guy who came in and replaced him. And he had always been kind of a solid, reliable third D tackle for the Bengals. I think he broke his leg or broke his ankle really bad 2 years ago. Didn't play. I don't think he played at all this past year. But hopefully he's back and healthy. And he was a good player. That might be a really cheap under-the-radar signing if Cincinnati lets him walk. So those are my four guys at D tackle.
That's a good list also, and I like the idea that you mentioned about Earl Mitchell being, you know, on the outs. I think that's a pretty obvious move, and this position is tough for me because I don't know how I feel about Jordan Phillips going into 2017. It has a lot to do with what I'm going to do at this position, and I think that he's shown signs of becoming more of a not an every down player because no one on the defensive line really is unless you're Ndamukong Suh and you're a freak, but more of a consistent player that can give you more snap counts, more of a higher snap count because he's been basically a part-time player the last couple of years.
Like you were saying earlier about Paul Sully, I think he's kind of on that same track. So, you know, I think I get where you're going with that. So
yeah, he's got that upward trajectory where he's showing you improvement. I mean, he improved against the run a little bit this year. He had some tough games. That playoff game, he had despite the flashes he made, I think the first possession of the game, he had a pretty good stuff on like second and five. And I was like, all right, we're in this game. And then, you know, Antonio Brown did what he did. But I think he had a lot of plays where he gets put on skates. And they do like to double him and Sue a lot inside and then kind of take advantage of our linebackers. So I think his size is something you can really work with. And as you mentioned, you know, Nick Fairley, I think, is the number one and the only guy I really need to look at on this list because, like you said, there's no reason he shouldn't have been here the last couple of years. You put him together with Sue. You obviously made the move this year to make Sue more of a prominent force in the defense and kind of play around what he can do, especially because he's the most gifted guy on the defense. So why not supplement him with guys that he can work with, has worked with in the past, and can succeed with? So I like that idea a lot. Looking at this list a little bit here, you get some older guys. I'm a big fan of Carl Klug. I don't know what the scheme fit would be there. He's been a pretty good guy alongside Jarrell Casey inside for the Titans for the last couple of years. He offers you a little bit more as a pass rush too from that inside spot, so he'd be something to look at if he doesn't strike it big. And then, man, there are some big money names on this list. Kawan Short and Dontari Poe, probably not going to get out of town from their home teams, but they're going to get some big money just looking at the list. And the last name I saw here, Kevin, was a former Dolphin, one that I actually became a big fan of. I can't remember the year they signed him. I want to say it was 2009. And he was playing in the fourth quarter of the preseason games. He was a free agent from Jacksonville, and he was making plays. And I was like, who the heck is that guy? This big dude with dreadlocks. So Tony McDaniel, who moved on to Seattle after playing with the Dolphins, he's out there too. He's 31 years old. Could be kind of an Earl Mitchell replacement if you want to go cheap and spend the big money on the DN and the guard and all that stuff. So I think he's one you could look at as well coming back to this team.
Yeah, I think he's a nice, solid veteran. I almost thought you were going to say AJ Francis there for a second.
Could have fooled me.
But yeah, I think, you know, just to kind of to sum it up for me, the only other position I think you'd look at would be, you know, a cheap pass catching tight end to kind of team up with Sims and Gray. At least in both of our scenarios, we're bringing Sims back. But I didn't really look at too many of the tight ends. I think, you know, with the draft class being so deep, you know, we'll kind of go to that well. But those were all the positions I had. Travis, did you have any, you know, other positions you looked at?
You teed me up perfectly because I did want to talk about tight ends a little bit because, you know, you and I have talked about that draft a lot this year. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, power football, inline blocking, a guy that can flex out, be a mismatch. Basically that kind of, you know, Swiss Army knife of a tight end type of guy that you want. And I mentioned this on the forum a while back, how I'm having a hard time figuring out what the hell it is that Adam Gase wants from a tight end, because we saw him with, you know, obviously Julius Thomas in Denver. He had Martellus Bennett in Chicago. I think that if he were to hit the market, that'd be hard to, you know, go away from because Martellus Bennett's a freaking stud. But this year he starts off with Jordan Cameron, who I thought all along should have been cut because I just think that he's got injury problems. He wasn't that good. He didn't fit this offense. So he goes from those type of guys, and then he has success with Deion Sims. He talked up Deion Sims, and he had success with Marquise Gray and even a little bit of a Dominic Jones there for a little bit. So it's hard to say what they're going to do there. I think that the draft is the direction you have to go for tight end, but I think that if you can get I don't know, are they going to have Sims be the one and then try to find a two, or are they going to have some guy that can battle for the one? I think you're best served allocating that money towards DN, linebacker, and guard, like we had mentioned earlier. So I think that you probably stay away from the tight ends, even though it's something they could look at.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if I don't think they're going to be in the market for a Martellus Bennett or even, you know, someone like Julius Thomas or Jermaine Gresham or something like that. But, you know, they drafted Thomas Duarte. They messed around with a couple, you know, receiving type guys on the practice squad. I almost wonder if they kind of just view it as, you know, Sims is the one, Marquise Gray is the two, and, you know, if they can develop Thomas Duarte or bring in, you know, someone like a Chris Gregg or a Michael Rivera, you know, to sort of be that flexed out, oversized receiver, almost like a Jordan Reed or, you know, I hate to bring up the name, but back in the day, like an Aaron Hernandez type of guy, you know, I think there's guys in the draft that you can look at for that, and we'll get to that in, you know, in a later episode. But, you know, to me, that seems like, you know, would be kind of be the only thing, you know, I can see them really truly investing in is someone cheap who's athletic, who can catch the ball. Because I think between Sims and Gray, you know, you have enough blocking prowess. And then I guess if they really wanted to bring back Dominique Jones, that dude was pretty big. He was almost like having an extra, you know, lineman out there when he was out there.
He's so big around the trunk. It does look pretty weird seeing him a tight end out there.
Yeah. He almost reminds me of, do you remember Algie Crumpler?
Oh, yeah.
You know, back in the day. Yeah. Almost kind of reminded me of that. But
big body. You
know, I think if Miami's going to hit, you know, a tight end, you know, it's probably going to be some sort of like smaller, undersized, you know, mismatch type of guy. Although I feel like with, you know, Kenyon Drake and Jakeem Grant and even Damian Williams to, you know, some extent, he was pretty good in the passing game, made some nice catches. I feel like those three guys could almost do the role of, you know, a Jordan Reed if you were looking for that. So those are all the positions I covered. You know, Travis, we have anything else for tonight?
Yeah, you got me into one more point I wanted to touch on here, because I'm glad you mentioned Aaron Hernandez, because one of my favorite draft guys, I've done my most favorite guy, is Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network and the Move the Sticks podcast. I think he's awesome. He just released his top 50 list the other day, and he doesn't really, you know, buy into the conventional, like, this is who has to be in this spot. He'll do his list based on who he sees as the best player. So I like that about him a lot. But it's funny you mentioned Aaron Hernandez, because you talked about this tight end from the University of Miami. I think last episode it was David Njoku, and I think that's what we're going with on the pronunciation, you and I.
Yeah.
But he compared it.
Until we're told otherwise.
Yeah. we're going Bob Greasy on you guys right now. We've had a couple wild turkeys in the booth calling the fourth quarter of an August preseason game here in, you know, downpour Miami. But all jokes aside, I think that, you know, I think there is some validity to that comparison with Aaron Hernandez, you know, minus the whole killing thing. But he does kill on the field, and I'm full of bad puns and segues tonight, man. It's pretty bad. But he's that guy you mentioned that can flex out. And I think one of our favorite guys for you and me, at least, and he's a big draft guy too, is a boomer from thefins.com. It's Simon Clancy. I think it's at Cy Clancy on Twitter, I believe. So
yeah, that sounds right. Okay. Looking it up.
This is a guy that he grew up in England. He would get, like, I think scouting tapes sent to him from guys in, like, around the country. Over in England, he would watch tape, like, on his, I don't even know, like a VHS probably, who knows. But the guy's a stud when it comes to evaluating draft talent. And he mentioned that he would have a hard time seeing Adam Gase pass on David Njoku if he was there, because we mentioned the big high-profile tight ends that Gase has had in the past. So I think Njoku is a guy that could be a potential target there in that first round if they just say, you know, fuck it and go big on the offense to try to build a powerhouse unit. But Kevin, that's all I've got for that topic. I have a surprise for you before we wrap things up, unless you wanted to get anything else in from the free agents, or maybe you have a draft prospect, or just give me anything, Kevin. Last word for you.
I think we'll see a lot more of Jakeem Grant in 2017. That's my last word for tonight.
I like that. I told you I watched that Chargers game today when he muffed that punt on the 5-yard line. The kid looked like he was going to throw up. It's hard to watch because I like him a lot, so I hope he does get it figured out. And I've been critical of him, but I hope you're right. But my surprise I found for you, Kevin, was you mentioned a play earlier in the game. I'll tell you a little story here, since you always have such good stories for us. That Halloween game against the Bengals a couple of years, was that 2014? That was Bullygate, right? So
2013,
that's right. So, yeah, this was the game before Bullygate. My train of thought got lost here for a second. In that game, Thursday night game, primetime, excited to watch it, and I lived at my brother's house at the time, and he had a local cable company, so he had the NFL Network, but he didn't have the ticket. We had to go to a buddy's house to watch the Sunday game, so I was excited to watch a game at his house, which was my house at the time, and hang out there and drink some beers on a Thursday and get excited for it. But we get back to the house, and I turn on the NFL Network around like 4:20 my time, so 7:20 on the East Coast when the game started at 8:30. And I try to turn the game on, and NFL Network is the only channel on the entire network of like 900 channels that says this program is not available. And it stayed that way for about a half an hour, and I like called my brother who was coming home from work, and I was like, hey, we got a problem here, man. Like, we're not going to be able to watch the game. So we went to it's called the pub. It's like a couple blocks from his house down the way. And it's basically my high school reunion. Every time I go there, there's tons of high school or kids went to my high school that go there and drink. So we went to the pub, and it was, you know, Halloween party was there. So there's people in costumes all over the place, like even at 5:30 at night. And I, you know, if I go to a bar and watch a game, I'm not going to, you know, skimp out on the beer. So we had I must have had, you know, a pitcher and a half, two pitchers to myself at this point when Cam Wake got the safety on Andy Dalton. And I remember jumping up out of my stool and then flicked the stool back and it hit the table behind us. And there were these good looking girls were like, what the hell is that guy's problem? And I didn't care about the good looking girls because Wake just got a walk off safety. And we were celebrating that night for sure. So my surprise for you, Kev, was I was going to go ahead and just give you a little bit of a drop on this.
All right, let's hear it.
Of course, I picked a crappy video of it. That audio was crappy. I gambled and lost. Let's try this one. I love when you hear Mayock just says, ball game. It's game over. Man, what a fun night that was. Cam Wake, such a stud.
Yeah, well, that actually brought up one more question. You mentioned Daniel Jeremiah. Do you have any other, you know, like, as we get into the draft, you know, podcast, the next episode, do you have any other like draft guys that you follow or like? Because I feel like at least the last 2 or 3 years, you know, Mike Mayock's kind of just nosedive off a cliff. At least from where everything I've read and heard from him, I just don't think he's very good anymore. But yeah. You know,
yeah, he has. I'm disappointed in that too because I used to really like his opinion. I thought he was a pretty good evaluator. But I think that, you know, and we mentioned this on the forum too. I think a guy that gets a lot of crap undeservedly is Mel Kiper, probably just because he kind of has a punchable face. But man, that guy's been doing this for so long. And I remember his blue books back in like the 90s that he used to write, where he would mail them out to you. And I didn't do it myself because I was a kid, but that's the stories that I heard. So I think Mel Kiper's still a good one. I don't know much about his Twitter following or whatever, because I don't think I even follow him on Twitter. But Matt Waldman, I'm not sure his website name, but he does some really good stuff. He was the one that got me sold on Ryan Tannehill back at A&M, talking about how he was pro-ready because of some of the stuff he would see pre-snap and the way he moved in the pocket and kind of reset his platform to throw. So Matt Waldman's a good one. I think Matt Miller, I think he's at Bleacher Report. He's a really good one. Andy Benoit does some good stuff too. So those are some of the guys that I check out. But Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks are two of my favorite ones.
Yeah. And I think I told you this one time off the air, but that Nolan Narwaki guy who used to – he's basically Joel Buchsbaum's like understudy. He used to write for NFL.com. Now he's doing his own thing, kind of like Kiper. I bought his draft guide last year. I thought it was really good. And, you know, I agree. I think Mel Kiper does get a lot of crap. I think he knows – a lot about a lot of players and knows what they're good at. I think the thing that kind of, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but just, you know, I think he's always like a little bit off in terms of what the NFL teams actually need versus like which player's going to be good. I think he hits that kind of on the head. And I think Todd McShay is kind of, you know, the opposite. He rates players pretty wrongly sometimes, but he kind of has that, you know, feel of what the teams need a little bit better. So yeah, I figured that would be kind of a good teaser for the next podcast.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And that's a really good point too about Kiper. I wanted to touch on that too, because I'm a big fan of the guy, but he does get those wrong quite a bit in terms of mock drafts. But mock drafts are, you know, about as valuable as toilet paper in my opinion, because I mean, they go wrong at one pick and the whole thing's gone awry. So yeah, good teaser there, Kevin. Good point. That will just about do it for this episode for us tonight. You know, don't forget to check out the entire Welcome to Perfectville catalog. We have the Welcome to Perfectville podcast with Sam and Chris. Check those guys out. Give us a rating and a review on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to this podcast. It helps get us out to more Dolphins fans, gets us more popularity, makes us want to do it more, and we love seeing all that stuff. So give us a 5-star rating, a nice little review, subscribe to the podcast, check out the blog portion. Kevin, you mentioned it in the podcast, Kevin, but I promise you that article is going to be up this week. I've been super slammed at work. I work in water mitigation, and we've been having an ice storm for the past month. So I've been doing nothing but taking calls and going and seeing water-damaged houses. So that article that Kevin mentioned is coming very soon. It's in my email box. I will get it up this week, I promise, by everything I have. So check out, you know, Ronan's Ramblings is Kevin's blog post. My blog post is the Write Travis Write tab of WelcomeToPerfectville.com. You know, if you go there, you can check out all of our stuff there. We have all the podcasts, all the blogs, the Finjury Report, all that good stuff. This is going to be the home for you guys for the Dolphins offseason. Chris and Sam got you covered on all their stuff. Me and Kevin are going to be draft gurus this offseason for you guys, planning having a separate draft tab for Dolphins interest players, or players of interest, I should say, for the draft season. So be sure to check that out. Our next episode is going to be the draft preview, which, Kevin, I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to that one more than anyone I ever have.
Yeah, I've got to study up a little bit for that one.
It's all good, man. I know you'll get there. I trust your eye as well as anybody's. So, yeah, that'll be it for tonight, guys. Check out the upcoming podcast episodes with the draft coming up and free agency. It's an exciting time to be a Dolphins fan. 10-6, looking at possibly improving to hopefully 12, maybe 13 wins next year. You know, sky's the limit. So we'll get you covered for the draft, free agency, and all that good stuff. So thanks for listening tonight, and you guys take care.
Thanks for listening to the Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, and go to WelcomeToPerfectville.com for the very best coverage of your Miami Dolphins. Fins up.